Hello and welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb Keith, and today I am joined by my father, Sky Keith, and by Adam Francisco. Today is a bit of a sad episode. I'm sure almost all of our listeners have seen or heard by now that Dr. Rod Rosenblatt died. I think by the time this episode comes out, that'll be about 2 weeks ago, 10 days or something like that. Very sad for 1517, very sad for the Thinking Fellows, and for the countless people who Rod had impacted. I would ask everybody to pray for Rod's family, especially for his son and his daughter and his grandkids. It's an incredibly hard time for people who knew and loved Rod. But 1517 is trying to work and use this opportunity to highlight the work that Rod did throughout the years and to redistribute some of his materials. I've been on the back end of seeing things like The Gospel for Those Broken by the Church or his Galatians Bible study and things like that sort of re-enter the mix, get some love on the front pages of 1517, and maybe through this tragedy expose some more people who didn't get to see those things in person or have Rod as a professor or teacher to hear those things for the first time. On this episode today, you know, we unfortunately had to recently do something like this with Jim Neskin as well. We sort of did an episode on remembering and the legacy of Jim. And I think that's what we want to do today is do an episode on the legacy of Rod and remembering him and the work that he did. I imagine that some Thinking Fellows listeners are familiar with Rod because of the Thinking Fellows and because of his co-hosting of this show for its first, I think, 4 or 5 years.
Well, it had to be 2020, and if we launched it in, to what, 15, it'd be 5 years.
Yeah, so for the first 5 years of Thinking Fellows, Rod was a staple and an every week host of the show, and especially the first 3 years when we were all down in Thurvine, you know, San Juan, Orange County area, in the garage.
Those were good days.
Yeah, they were good days. And I mean, it was funny. It was never really a conscious choice for specifically for Rod not to be on the show anymore. It's just when Adam moved and when we moved, and then after we moved, we were still going down to San Clemente to record for a good long while. And Rod would come for that, but honestly,
well, then it was getting hard to ask Rod to drive all that way.
And honestly, the big change was COVID, when we just all went remote, and I'd say remote pretty individualistically. Like, we started buying recording units that every podcaster had in their house, and there was no way on earth we were going to be able to show Rod how to use a Rodecaster.
No.
And so it just sort of, in a sense, the choice was made for us at that point, which was sad for everybody involved. But at the same time, that's right around the time when we decided to launch Rod's YouTube show with his son, Ted Talks with Dad Rod, which was filmed on location, but it was much easier for somebody to pick Rod up and get him to Ted's house where he could then stay for several days.
Yeah.
Than it was to get him to San Clemente.
It was a much more fair ask to do in person.
It was just getting hard. I mean, Rod was, you know, almost 80 when he stopped, almost 80 when he stopped being on Thinking Fellows. I mean, think about that. That's crazy. And so he was a podcaster in his late 70s. It's kind of great.
Well, and that's kind of...
Yeah. And a YouTuber in his 80s.
With his 80s, yeah.
I kind of love that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is kind of awesome.
Well, and the history with, you know, the White Horse Inn forever, too.
Yeah, this kind of...
was an extension of what he did.
That's kind of media. This one thing I will say about Rod, we wouldn't have been able to show him how to independently use a Rodecaster at 79 years old. I don't think. I mean, maybe, but I don't think so. But Rod was always sort of... back when Adam and I first met him, and he was at that point in his late... early 60s, probably, or late 50s.
It would have been 50s. Yes, yeah. 50s.
Yeah. he was always ahead of most of the other people his age technologically, especially if it had anything to do with Apple and Mac. And then also in it, throughout his whole career, had a willingness to do a type of, as an academic, a willingness to do a type of media that a lot of academics would not have done. And Rod is was a classically trained academic. He wasn't sort of somebody who's academically minded, but sort of a public personality. He was a classically trained academic who really got his start on the apologetics world, doing formal debates with other academics. So, I mean, talking pretty high level stuff here.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the interesting things about Rod, and I think a big part of his legacy, and I think functionally why 1517 is the way it is as a sort of, if it was not Christian, you would call it a media company, right? In our world, we'd kind of call it a parachurch organization or a Christian nonprofit or whatever, but in the secular world, or if this was not a nonprofit,
we're
a media empire, right? And the reason for that is, I think in large part, Rod's legacy as an academic is not a stack of books that it's published. It is media. It is White Horse Inn episodes. It is videos of lectures. Yeah. It is table talks. Yeah. It is guest appearances places. And so he, in an interesting way, was, like you said, on the cutting edge. But also, I think when you talk about the broad impact that Rod had, that's part of the reason why, is he traveled and would just go talk to people, which meant that he had to take things from the academic world or from an apologetic debate world and bring them to people in normal churches, people who didn't read volumes of systematic theology books or history or whatever it was. And he did it in a very successful way.
I think Adam, go ahead. Sorry.
The last thing I heard Rod say, that was about less than a month ago, was that weekend I came out there, Scott,
yep.
And we, went to the Discovery Institute thing and at a back, what do we call it? An Ozfest, a backyard barbecue,
yeah.
Basically, with food that's better than just a regular barbecue. But
a nice backyard.
Rod was there, and you know how it's whenever you'd walk into whether it's Here We Still Stand conference or just a gathering, and Rod's there, and he's got that smirk on his face, and he's happy. You feel like, wow, he approaches you with a smile, and you're like, wow, he's actually happy to see me. Not that he wouldn't be, but just that, like, approval, right? Ron was there in the backyard. I walked just before everybody starts gathering and walked up. We talked about the Faith and Reason Exchange, which everybody should listen to, and apologetics and so on. And then later on in the evening, the last words that I heard from Rod before he left for the evening was, what can be said clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that's kind of it's a riff off of the last line in Wittgenstein's Tractatus, which Rod taught about and in its place in sort of the history of Anglo or English-speaking philosophy. And for Rod, I sometimes wonder, I always, among professors, there's those professors who are really good at teaching and those that do a lot of research, right? And Rod was a phenomenal teacher, but I think that one of the reasons why he didn't do research is there wasn't a whole lot more to do in his particular field, right? Like, if you're doing systematic theology, if you're doing something new, you're probably, I think this is a safe space because Scott's on team no innovation. maybe doing something wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so for him and his vocation as professor of theology, there wasn't anything new to do, but what needed to be done was to communicate what was true.
Yes.
And so, like, the last line in Montgomery's Tractatus is, whereof one can speak, one must not be silent. And that was Rod. He knew there was not just good grounds, there were sure grounds for the truthfulness of the gospel, and his life revolved around communicating that wherever he might go. And I remember him telling me, I don't know all the places he went to, but Scott, you mentioned he did these debates, and I wish there were these things on YouTube when he would do that stuff for, was InterVarsity Fellowship, I think, in the early days. And
yep,
he, you know, he would go around and he had this gift for making complex things very simple. His, the Gospel for Those Broken by the Church lecture. I listened to that the other day. It had been some time, and I was thinking the whole time, man, this is like bringing complicated systematic theology, or what could be very complicated, into very clear and lucid prose. And that was his gift.
It was.
He wasn't a C.S. Lewis, but he was kind of like parallel to C.S. Lewis in his ability to make things comprehensible.
Well, I'm sure C.S. Lewis was a great teacher. I don't know if he was, but he was a very verbose author, and Rod wasn't. Rod was a great teacher. He was a great teacher, and this was the thing. I mean, the number of people that you could even just sort of close your eyes and think about that were inspired, even if they were already in a pre-sem program or whatever, but inspired to take theology and the study of theology seriously as a real academic endeavor, that they should really invest time, mental energy, and just love into, that the names would go on and on. I said in that little article that I wrote hundreds, but over the course of 30 years at Concordia and I think 10 years at Westmont, it might be thousands, you know. I don't know, but it's a lot, and that's because he was such an inspiring teacher, and he always wanted to teach undergrad. He could have taught graduate school, he could have taught seminary. He wouldn't have fit in very well at the seminary, I don't think. but he could have. I mean, he had all the qualifications to do so.
Sure.
But he wanted to teach undergraduate students, I think, because he believed that he could get them at a point where they could be inspired to take this endeavor seriously. And that's what he did. I think even his colleagues at Concordia, even those that loved him and or were indifferent about him or sometimes frustrated with him, acknowledged that. I mean, the number of people that he, from an undergraduate degree, inspired to go on to serious graduate work is astonishing, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I went to at the call to teach at Concordia in Irvine, you came like 2 years later, I think, but
the next year, thanks to you.
Okay. So I don't remember if you were there for this, but, and you probably actually were, or at least heard about it there. The word kind of trickled out from the administration that they were a little nervous, isn't the right word, but a little, kind of befuddled, I guess, because so many of the new faculty were Rosenblatt students or, somehow influenced by Rod Rosenblatt. And so we were dubbed, I think it was the 1530 Club, you know, year of the Augsburg Confession.
Yeah.
And the way it was told to me is that the administration was a little worried because Rod had, through his letters of recommendation and his training, sent us all off to do like serious, we didn't do like these online EDD, I shouldn't have said that. Does that mean? But we did serious PhDs in theology at different places. And then all of a sudden you got all these guys on faculty who are young, and there's all these old faculty who did these kind of like correspondence PhDs from decades past, right? And the administration's like, oh dear.
I think it's a little more simple than that.
It was intimidating. Or something.
I mean, it would be fair to describe Rod as fairly anti-administration. it would be fair to describe most of the people that really sort of grabbed on to Rod and his ethos is also kind of anti-administration. And so I think from the inside, I know that one of the fears was that you just had all these people that weren't
going to play the game.
Were very well qualified, so you couldn't really say no to giving them a job, and were kind of anti-administration too. I think it's fair to say that most of the people that got hired on during that time weren't half as anti-administration as Rod was, like in the way that it sort of played out. I mean, Rod, God love him, God just love him. he refused to use an official email address or his whole entire career.
That's right.
He refused to use Blackboard, which is sort of the learning management system that everybody has to use. And in fact, would publish in every syllabus that he handed out, paper copy syllabus that he would hand out, a like 6-page diatribe on why Blackboard was awful.
Yeah.
With every syllabus, syllabi that went out, that boom, you know. And so now I can honestly say that I don't think any of the professors that were hired because of, you know, going off to graduate school because of Rod did anything like that. Like nobody was that brave. Rod was a unique character in how brave he was with that kind of thing. But I think that was always the fear, right? Are we going to get 10 professors that are printing diatribes against Blackboard and their syllabi? I mean, I wish I would have.
Yeah.
Blackboard's truly horrible.
All of them. Well, I remember thinking that Rod's style was just sort of normal for like a classic type of professor. And then all my years at Irvine, I would sign into Blackboard, you know, to make the course available or whatever, and maybe post a syllabus, but I never used the grade book or these sorts of things. And then I remember being on the other side, being an administrator at River Forest.
Being frustrated.
And all of a sudden you're having to enforce using Blackboard and encourage them. You might want to.
That's why Rod just gave you that funny look when you said you took that job. He wasn't going to say, I don't think you should do that.
You've joined the dark side.
He wouldn't say you've joined the dark side, but he just kind of gave you that funny look. Oh.
Mm. Why do we? Funny. Let's not dig up old.
well, this is all part of the, I think, it's, I mean, that's part of what when you were in undergrad that was sort of, you know, maybe libertarian minded, that when you got Rod, you were just blown away. I remember one of the first classes I took with Rod was Intro to Philosophy course, and it was taught in, what's the science building, Adam? Or where the biology...
Founders Hall.
But do you remember that? I don't even think it exists anymore, but that classroom on the second story of Founders Hall that was kind of like a closet door entrance, and it held maybe 10 desks, and it was much wider than it was long.
Yeah.
So it was in that weird classroom. And in the first lecture, which we were supposed to go in over Plato's analogy of the cave, which, of course, we did, but at some point, Rye got onto taxes. And I remember sitting, and I was, and one of the biggest criticisms I ever got from older people that knew me when I was 18 is that I was far too conservative for an 18-year-old. And I remember he put it on there, he says, and they, oh, he was talking about the flat tax rate. And he goes, I'm opposed to the flat tax rate because those, and cuss word, want it to be 10%, and I think it should be, and he does a decimal point, and he's like, decimal point 0000000000001%. And I was like, just automatically, oh, I love this guy. I love this guy. And I didn't even have any money to pay taxes with, so I was still like, I still love you. This is amazing.
My first memory, I think it's my first memory of Rod, or the first time I saw him that I remember, I guess is the better way of putting it, is walking into the suite, the professor's suite of theology, and Rod's sitting on the floor. I think he's on his knees, and young Caleb, with the same sort of circumference arms that he still has, but about 25 years ago, with his ears sticking out, kind of looking like Edmund, is pushing around trucks or something, and Rod's down there like making truck noises.
Yep, absolutely.
and then he was like, okay, I got to run off to class, and he grabs a, I don't know what it
just stack of crap all the time.
Good point. Yeah. Lecturing on
with a coffee cup on top.
Yeah.
The genus Myostaticum. Did you say that right?
Yeah,
or whatever. So he was different in the sense that he was a mensch, I think is the word.
Yeah. I mean, I remember he was always your ally if he needed to get something done. Do you remember the number of independent study classes that he would offer if there was couldn't do this anymore. But when I look at my transcript, like a third of the classes are independent study.
No, you could not do that.
And it's just amazing. And it's yeah. just, it's,
and he'd do them for free oftentimes.
He'd do them for free.
Yeah, because, yeah, yeah.
Which
yeah.
you could maybe see if you had like one good student trying to do something because they're not going to take up that much of your time. But he'd enroll 12 people in these things and then meet them after he was done working at a restaurant and sit there.
Coco's.
Yeah, Coco's.
Was it
yeah.
Coco's?
Coco's.
Always, or?
Well, yeah, my wife worked. We moved to Coco's because that's where Joy worked. And we'd all get a discount when she was there. And he'd fill her glass of his. Remember, he'd get the one glass of wine. And he'd say it every time like she didn't know. Glass of rosé filled all the way to the top. And she would fill that thing so there was only surface tension and keeping the wine in the glass. And then he would order the broccoli cheese soup and do the same thing. She'd do the same thing with the soup because that's all he would eat. So pretty amazing. But he'd sit there. Can you just think about this? This professor is showing up multiple times per week after he's officially done working, driving across town, often taking students with him across town, getting at, you know, and then sitting in this restaurant for, and these classes went longer than a normal class because there was always good discussion, oftentimes for an hour, 2 hours. Who wouldn't love that professor if you loved your subject?
Yeah.
Maybe it was just truly amazing. Just that undergraduate experience was, I can't even imagine it being any better than it was.
Yeah, and I can't imagine anybody getting that sort of undergraduate experience anywhere. Maybe there might be a few outposts, but very rare thing.
Well, it's like you'd have too many liability discussions. They probably were having them. They were probably having them then. If you think about it, right?
Did they have an HR department then? He was
yeah.
HR nightmare.
Yeah, they're probably having these discussions then, and he's doing it anyway.
Well, I believe there did get to a point where he couldn't offer independent study for free anymore, stuff like that. Like, because Paul, yeah, you know, they or if you do it, it's not for credit. It has to go through all the right channels, you know, stuff like that. So stuff changed. I mean, by the time I got there, so I was, I don't even remember what years I was at Concordia, but it was Rod's last 3 years that I was there for. And I knew Rod was going to retire. I had insider knowledge that Rod was going to retire. And so I tried to stack up as many classes as he offered into the first 2 years, which as a freshman is hard because they don't want you taking classes. You know, they try to pick your classes for first several semesters and stuff. And, I remember having to go change courses. You got to go to this office and that office.
We had to do that back in the day.
In order to get them with him and trying to warn people too, like warn everybody I knew who came in. I was like, if you want to take Rosenblatt, like you got to do it now. You got to do it now and stuff like that. But, you know, I just remember a lot of people being like, well, I'd have to go fight with counseling to go change 4 classes. I'm like, it's worth it. But, you know, you know, it was different even then. You had to kind of...
Yeah, well, I'll tell one funny story. I've told many, but this I think I've told the story many times, but it's still hilarious. It was at the point where I was TAing for him. I TA'd for him for 2 years, and I was at Concordia for 3, so I don't really remember. It's the last, one of the last 2 years I was there. I had taken, and even then, you had to have an academic advisor, and you didn't really get to choose your academic advisor. And mine was fine. I still know her. She was fine, but she didn't understand like the appeal to Rod Rosenblatt. And she didn't understand why I was in her office every semester at the beginning of the semester having her sign, you know, 3 independent study courses with Rod. And she just didn't sort of get the track. And I was very resistant to allowing her to make like a graduation plan for me. And so it just wasn't fitting well. And I was the kind of student that I would study. So some people, I compare me and Paul Koch this way all the time. Some people sort of like just are rebels, and they're kind of like rebels with or without a cause. I can be a rebel, but it's always with a cause. Like I'm never a rebel for no reason. But once I'm a rebel, I take in all the information. So I'm the one that sat down and read the student handbook from like beginning to end, and back then especially had the ability to memorize whole sections of it. And I came across this part that said, a student, and I think it said something like, a student is technically allowed to choose their own advisor as long as that advisor is a member of the faculty in good standing. And I was like, excuse me. So I went up to this lady's office and I said, I'd like the form to change my advisor. And she goes, well, why? And I go, because I would like Dr. Rosenblatt to be my advisor. And she said, well, Dr. Rosenblatt can't be your advisor. He's not a member of the advising team. I said, ah, actually, on page this and this paragraph, this is a student handbook. It says that I am allowed to choose my own advisor as long as they are a member of the faculty in good standing. And I believe Dr. Rosenblatt is a member of the faculty in good standing. She goes, well, technically you can do that, but he doesn't know anything about like writing a graduation plan. I said, I can figure out a graduation plan for myself. I just need the paperwork that says I can do this. So she reluctantly gives it to me. I walked down to Rod's office. He was in his office. I literally sat the paper in front of him and said, sign this. And he goes, what is it? I said, don't worry about it. I'll tell you later. Just sign in. And he signs it. And I take it back up to the class. And then I come back down to his office. I go, okay, you're now my academic advisor. He goes, oh, okay, what does that mean? I go, it means nothing for you. Don't worry about it. It was pretty great. So that was fun.
That's very good. And then, so there's the Concordia impact, there's the White Horse Inn and the media impact, and then there's obviously sort of the broader teaching at churches impact throughout the years. A lot of people know Rod from, like, teaching Bible class, right?
Yeah, I said this at church on Sunday. It's kind of funny. When I first got to Concordia, Rod was, I think, an assistant pastor at Huntington Beach.
I think he was vacancy pastor at Redeemer.
Yeah,
for,
Redeemer, Huntington
for
Beach,
a while.
Or something like that. But I remember there being two people there.
Mm.
And he did that for a while, but I think around 96 or 97, he moved over to Faith Capo Beach and started doing something that I think was originally on Tuesday nights that moved to, I think, Thursday nights, where he would do sort of like a Lutheran take on expository preaching through the text in conjunction with a small, you know, abbreviated order of worship that was amazing and was meant to sort of draw in evangelicals and kind of hook them with the expository preaching, but give them solid Lutheran theology and law gospel throughout it. And he originally did this with Romans, but he did it for years and years there. I mean, just for a long time. And believe it or not, that church eventually filled up with former evangelicals that maybe had heard Rod on White Horse Inn and were in Orange County and decided to come check it out. And, you know, over the course of time, two of our friends talk about hearing a radio ad that maybe Faith Capo ran, that Rod was doing this, and they had had him as a professor for a doctrine course at Westmont, and then went in because of that and brought with them. They were, you know, leaders in their sort of little evangelical community, and brought with them many people, many who are still at Faith today, and all of whom, as far as I know, are still Lutheran today, even if they're not at Faith anymore. It's a pretty amazing story, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it also kind of highlights, like, the more you talk about this era, it's like Rod is teaching his normal course at Concordia. He's teaching all these various independent studies that students are looking for. He's traveling often to do apologetics places. Yeah. And then he's also doing Thursday nights at a church.
Yeah,
somewhere in Orange County. It's like 7 days a week he's teaching.
Yeah. Yeah. And helping people on this. Well. Yeah. And helping people on the side to a level that, you know, I mean, if people have read Being Dad, I tell the story about him literally giving our family money that got us through the summer when we were, you know, both living on the university and working for the university, but didn't pay that much. He was responsible, I believe, for getting me the job teaching Sunday school, high school Sunday school at Faith Capo. too. I mean, just, you just can't even, it's hard to just even describe, to be honest with you.
Right. Yeah. And then, and then continued even in retirement, right? You know, so after Rod retired from teaching at Concordia, what would that have been, 20?
I think it was 15.
15 or 16. I think he retired before Thinking Fellows started, right? Or just as Thinking Fellows started. Gosh.
I don't remember.
It's a blur, but I cleared out his office. So,
yeah, me too.
I'm trying to.
Books.
Books. Paper. Boy. Paper. Lots and lots of paper.
He had an office. It was basically, it was a square, and it was just, wall to wall books with a square table in the middle.
Yeah.
Where he would put his laptop, right? Did he have that to the end?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
And that file, he did have a file cabinet. Yeah, file. It was out. Wasn't it in the.
He had
area because he didn't have room in his office.
He had a file cabinet in the office. The office had the long wall on the left was bookshelf all the way down, then bookshelf all the way across the back, and then bookshelf locking in his desk, like tiny little area for desk.
Oh, by that time, yeah, he'd taken the table in the middle was just full of papers. He had, had like a little typing stand on the side.
And then behind the door wouldn't open all the way because there were so many banker's boxes full of printed articles or scanned journal stuff that was just sky high. And so then when he knew he was going to retire, it was then sort of my job to start moving the papers first. And then, so the best part was, is that like a lot of these were downloaded, you know, to his computer and then printed. And then those files are no longer on whatever computer. And so it was then like, hey, Caleb, we're going to go through these. So it was like, take them to his place. And then we're going to scan them back onto his computer because he didn't want the paper anymore. So it was amazing. It wasn't hoarding, but Rod like really had a memory for like particular lines out of stuff, right? It'd be like, And so you'd have this banker's box and be like, go three banker's boxes deep, and then somewhere in the middle is going to be an article from, 1992, and it's going to say this on it. And, he kind of had that at the ready. And you could tell he printed all this stuff out so they could hand it to people, right? Because he had people in his office all the time. And so if you're having all these various conversations with him, he's going to tell you go grab this piece of paper.
You're going to get resources.
Yeah, you're going to get a stack of stuff.
Yeah.
And
he encouraged us all to acquire books and things to hand out, like little apologetic books or whatever.
Yeah.
To always have resources for people. Yeah.
He retired in 2015 because I wrote an article on Jagged Word that a legend retires and leaves a lively legacy.
Oh, there's a picture of the office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can put that in the show notes. He retired in 2015.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. And then Thinking Fellows started 2016. So right before that. So then, even in his retirement, then transitioned to recording with us and speaking at all the 15-17 conferences for the first several years. And then closed it out with Talks with Dad Rod, which is, he and Ted, and I think Ted did a very good job at the towards the end here with Talks, making it that a very specific way for people to connect with Rod again or for the first time through questions about comfort in the faith.
Yeah.
Talks with Dad Rod, available on YouTube if you haven't watched it before, but you can go. And Ted tries to pick like specific 10-minute questions to ask his dad that Ted knows how he's going to answer it. And it's in a way that's going to give people the comfort of Christ and Christ alone.
Well, isn't it often specifically questions that have been asked like via the comment section and stuff to you?
He's done comment section stuff.
Or social media.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah. And if you can get a hold of him, I mean, some of the years of White Horse Inn, there's just some gold there from Rod too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember putting my radio on top of our little hutch in the living room in 1995 and sticking the antenna close to the window so that we could pick up KKLA at 9 o'clock on Sunday night and listen to White Horse Inn, which is sometimes was pretty just amazing. So,
well, great guys.
Anything else before we close the episode out?
We have on the website, if people, and actually just got a text from his son Ted during this, that people are trying to send flowers and stuff to Ted, and that Ted would really just prefer that if they want to do something in Rod's memory, that they go to the 1517 website, to the Remembering Rod page, which you can get to right from the homepage. It's pretty prominent. Just click on that. It'll take you to Remembering Rod page. And at the bottom of that, there's a donation portal where you can give to the Rod Rosenblatt. I think it's the Philosophy, Theology, and Apologetics Fellowship mm-hmm. Fund, where we help support a graduate student in their graduate studies through that fund. And we support them from the start until they're done, and then we choose a new one. So yeah. we currently have somebody in that. Right now, it's Sarah Crowder, who's pursuing a PhD, I believe, at St. Louis Seminary. And so it's a great thing. So far, it's helped three students pursue their graduate studies. And so we hope to continue that and move it on. But if people want to do something, Ted has asked that they do that.
Okay, great.
Rather than anything else. So, and that's also up on the website saying that, but, you know, people are trying to be nice.
They are. We'll have links. So I'll have links in the show notes to that. We'll put that page up. That'll be the top link this week in lieu of the Support This Show page. I'll put that there. So if you would like to support the Thinking Fellows this week, you can go ahead and click that and support the Rod Rosenblatt Scholarship Fund.
Let me say one more thing. On that Remembering Rod page on our website, you can actually log in and write your own memory of Rod if you have one. And we're really encouraging people to do that. I mean, as family, it's hard right now, but I think over time, if we have collected all of those, it'll be a great comfort for them as time is as meaningful as Rod was to me and to Adam and even to you, Caleb. I mean, geez, Adam tells a story that him playing with you when you're 1.5 years old, for Pete's sake.
I can remember trips specifically to California from Nevada to come see. All I can remember about the trip was seeing Rod.
Yeah. And so, as great of a surrogate type father that he was to all of us, he was a great father to his own children and grandfather to his grandchildren. And they're struggling right now. And it will be, there'll be a time when looking through those memories of other people will just be a great comfort to them. So if people want to do that, I would definitely encourage that.
Okay, great. So that'll be the links in the show notes this week. We thank you for listening to the show. If you're a newer listener of the Thinking Fellows podcast, you can go a couple of years back and you can listen to episodes with Rod on it. The opening series we did on the Low Cheap.
He's most lively on that.
He has. He was really alive for that series. It was really fantastic and in a lot of ways made the Thinking Fellows what it was.
Yeah, you have him coming off the heels of being an active professor and still having a lot of those mannerisms that he had that made us all love him when he was a professor.
Yeah.
Aged, not that much, but sort of softened some of those sharp corners a little bit. But on the first series that we did on the Low Chi, Rod coming off of being an active professor, mm-hmm. they're still all there.
So, yeah, so very great. And I've gotten some messages this week about how important those episodes have been to various people as well. And so that impact and that legacy that Rod has left behind of proclaiming and teaching the gospel is certainly there, and we will continue to try to follow in those footsteps. So we thank you for listening to this episode of Thinking Fellows Podcast. We will catch you next time. Bye.